It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Strike one. Strike two.
Welcome back to Major League Baseball. Sort of.
Now, the Baseball Reporter's Offseason Podcast with Tony Mass.
Okay, welcome into the Baseball Reporter's Podcast. Again, not a lot happening with the Red Sox yet this offseason, so we'll get to some of that when it takes place. In the interim, the Hall of Fame ballots have been delivered. Obviously, Derek Jeter is the biggest name on the list. I thought this would be a good time to bring in John Harper, the New York Daily News. Current colleague. You still qualify as a colleague, don't you, Harp?
Just formerly of the Daily News.
Okay, formerly of the Daily News, you know, and obviously we co-authored a book together. So the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because we had an intern at the station last week say that Derek Jeter is overrated. Now, he didn't argue that Jeter's a Hall of Famer. I don't think there's anyone that would dispute that Derek Jeter is a Hall of Famer. I'm going to vote for him. I'm assuming you are, too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I mean, you know, to me, he's a no-brainer. I don't care if he's 100% or not 100%, whatever. We all know Jeter's going to get in. So my question to you is, the idea that Jeter is overrated, I actually agree with it a little bit, Harp. And I'm not telling you I think he's a bum. He's obviously a Hall of Fame player. But there are people who would put Derek Jeter in the same breath as, oh, I don't know, you know, Mantle or DiMaggio because of the history with the Yankees. How do you feel about Jeter's legacy as a player?
Well, yeah, I mean, overrated, I guess, depends how you're rating him. I do think that kind of came about because he was a Yankee and because he played on all those championship teams. I mean,
no question.
If he plays with Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians, or somebody, Kansas City Royals, is he Derek Jeter? He still had 3,400 hits as a shortstop. And, you know, he did, but I think the big moments are what elevated him. He did get a lot of clutch hits, especially in the postseason, and I think that elevated him. So I think the Yankees, being with the Yankees, definitely had something to do with it. But to say he's overrated, I mean, it depends how much you buy into the defensive metrics and the question of whether how good a shortstop he was defensively. He didn't have great range. We know that. But at the same time, you know, I saw him throughout his whole career, and he was as sure-handed as they came. And he also he was excellent at catching pop flies in the shallow outfield. Also excellent at coming in on short hop balls in the infield. He made a lot of good plays that the metrics wouldn't necessarily reward him for. So I mean he was the kind of guy, if you're a Yankee pitcher, you wanted the ball hit to him. That's so I think that has a lot of carries a lot of weight. And then he just, look, I saw him. I mean, he was probably the guy that you wanted up there in a big spot more than almost anybody else, because he wasn't trying to hit the ball out of the park. He would take the ball the other way. He slashed all those line drives to right field. I just saw him got a lot of big hits. So it's hard for me to call him overrated, because I think he was such a big part of those championship teams. And a lot of it had to do with, it's hard to measure the intangibles, but he really did become the guy that whole team was built around in terms of the way they went about their business. They were so businesslike. I mean, not that he didn't have fun with the game. Teammates really enjoyed him and all that. But there was a mindset that they were about, it's become almost a cliche, but they were all about winning championships and nothing else was good enough. That all started, a lot of that started with Jeter.
Well, so look, Harp, this is why I wanted to talk to you, because, again, you covered the guy, and I'm a huge Jeter fan, as you know. Huge.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to ask me to list my favorite players, not, and I mean on the field, okay? I couldn't give a rat's ass what they're like for the most part in the clubhouse. It's not as long as they're not huge negatives. I'm talking about players on the field. The guys that come to my mind when I think of the, first of all, you know, Griffey falls in both classes. I loved watching Griffey play, and Griffey is probably the best player I've ever seen. I suspect, I don't know if you feel the same way or not, because you're a lot older than I am. Yeah, exactly. I was hoping that wouldn't slip by.
I don't remember seeing that much of Stan Musial, to tell you the truth. So
okay, so you know, but when I think of those players, I think of Jeter, Robbie Alomar, I loved as a player, George Brett, yeah. I loved as a player offensively, and I think there's a good comp to be made here. Offensively, I think Jeter is a lot like Paul Molitor. I think they're very similar offensive players. They could bunt for a hit and beat you. They could shoot a ball down either line and beat you. They had enough power for you to respect it and that they could hit the ball out of the ballpark. Both were excellent base runners and could steal a base when they needed to. Like, to me, those guys were complete players. Now, Molitor didn't have any, you know, really defense at all to speak for.
Right.
Jeter was a solid, you know, he wasn't a gold glover, but Jeter was a steady, solid defender. So, go ahead.
I think it got to the point where there was so much talk about the metrics and all that toward the end of his career that I almost think he was underrated in some ways. Because, like I said, he always made the plays that, you know, you had the sure plays, the plays you had to make. So I think that counts for a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's great if you can be Andrelton Simmons and make all those plays from the hole. And Jeter, you know, maybe he didn't have to make those jump plays that maybe another guy wouldn't have jumped on those jump plays that he became famous for. But he made a lot of good plays. I mean, I saw him. I rarely ever saw him make an error on kind of the routine ball that could really hurt you. Now I'm an old shortstop myself, so I would rather watch
old is right.
I'd rather watch a guy like Omar Vizquel, Ozzie Smith, those guys. I mean, those guys were magicians. Vizquel was a magician with his hands, unbelievable. Jeter wasn't that guy, but when you factor in his offense, the all around package. I know shortstops became more of an offensive position. And during that era, Nomar for a little while, and A-Rod and some of those guys.
Tejada, too. Miguel Tejada with Oakland, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, Jeter was – it's hard to argue that he wasn't probably the top 10 of all-time shortstops. I don't know how you could argue that against that.
No, and again, if we break it down by position, then I think he's definitely in the discussion. But if you were to say, you know, top five players in the history of the game, and I'm just, you know, we're talking Griffey, Mays, Mantle, probably Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, he's not in that class.
No, you can't put him in there. He doesn't have those kind of offense. He wasn't that kind of a slugger. You can't put him in those categories because, yeah, I mean, Mays, Mantle, I mean, there's a whole list of them, all the home run guys, steroids or not. You can't put Jeter in that category. But Jeter had some really pretty impressive numbers for a shortstop. So it's just a matter of, yeah. And you know, and Yankee fans love to do the Mount Rushmore of Yankees. And I can't put him on that because, you know, you can't put him ahead of Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, and Mantle. Basically, those are the four, and Barra might be five. So Jeter maybe is six and Rivera seven, something like that. But there's always that discussion too.
What did his teammates and his managers think of him?
They loved him, and you know, they listen. And I know we've had this discussion, you and I. I thought I didn't love him as off the field, but I thought there was a little phony in him. You know, he the guy conducted himself as responsibly and as respectably as you'd ever want from a guy who played in New York all those years, especially a guy who was a single guy in New York all those years. But and I'm not, this didn't come from the players. They did love him, and the Torrey loved him, obviously. But there was a little phony in him in the way he dealt with the media. He, you know, he wouldn't give the media anything. He kept everybody at a distance. And yet, you know, as soon as his career was over, he wanted to open up the Players Tribune, and it was pretty clear that he had kind of he had kind of made it seem like he didn't really want that farewell tour. But that farewell tour was set up to put him in business and Players Tribune and everything else. So, there was that part of it. So I'm not a guy who necessarily loved him, but I got to give him his props for being that type of player. as the guy, you know, I mean, I think the whole unanimous Hall of Fame thing is kind of crazy anyway. If you're either a Hall of Famer or you're not, so I don't see why a guy like that wouldn't be a unanimous Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether it's 92%, 98, or 100, really, Harp, what's the difference? Once you're over 90, you're in an elite class, right? I mean,
I think it was silly all these years, though, guys that would withhold votes for guys like Seaver and Griffey and whoever else you want to name. I'm not sure why, because maybe they were protecting some tradition or something. The baseball writers over the years, nobody had ever gotten unanimous till Rivera got it. But having broken through that, I would think maybe, I mean, why would you not vote for a guy? I mean, I never understood that.
Yeah, so because you're an ass and you just, you know, really though, because you want to make it about the process instead of about the player, and it's supposed to be about the player. I mean, you know, but I'm curious as to when you say you weren't the craziest about Jeter, right? And I know you and I have had this discussion a million times, but was it because he made the job harder? In other words, and be honest, like, you know, I was on the outside. I dealt from the Boston standpoint. I never really had to go to him with any kind of regularity. And so I didn't have any issue with him. But to deal with on a daily basis, he was probably tougher than that because it wasn't a, you know, he didn't give you a lot.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this, too, is that, you know, A-Rod, you know, has got the reputation as being a fraud and all that. He was more regarded as the phony from the outside. But for me, I would much rather have dealt with A-Rod and did deal with A-Rod. He was a guy you could go to and just he loved to talk baseball. And off the record, he'd give you his opinions on whatever trade was made or this and that was going on with the team. If he came to trust you and he knew you weren't going to write it or go tell the next guy and somebody else in the clubhouse or whatever. So I had a lot of those discussions with him. Jeter, you just never got to that point with him. He didn't trust anybody when it came to that level of conversation. And the thing that bothered me more than anything was he was really treated like royalty in New York, and yet almost right to the end, he looked at you like you wanted to ask him about who he was dating, you know, that night instead of, you know, what how he was hitting or whatever. And he couldn't get past that. And I think some of that, you know, may go back to be growing up from a multiracial family or biracial family, however you put it. He took a lot of abuse as a kid, or apparently did, based on some of the stuff I've read about him. So maybe that mistrust, he couldn't get past that. But he was never treated badly by the press in New York, and he was respectful. It's just that he could be a little bit condescending. And he wasn't giving you anything in terms of depth or insight and all that. And you knew there was a lot more there because you would see him, you know, in byplay with his teammates and things like that. He was a funny guy. He liked to have fun. And there was a lot there in terms of personality. You know, he went and did Saturday Night Live. But he just wasn't going to give any of that to the writers. So it's not that on a personal level I had any problem with him, but on a business level, I guess, more than anything, I wanted to get more from Jeter because I knew there was more there, and he wouldn't give you any insight into just when you're asking about, hey, what, you know, to break down at a bat, break down a play, whatever. He just, you know, he gave you the bare minimum. So that's my issue with him.
Was there anybody who got close to him? Didn't Jack Curry get reasonably close to him?
Jack did the early book on him, the book when he was only a couple years in the big leagues. And, Jack will tell you that it wasn't the easy, even that wasn't the easiest process. So I don't think that there was any lasting relationship there where he was able to get more out of him. I think Sweeney Murdy of WFAN might have had the best relationship with him. Because Sweeney went to Penn State and Jeter didn't go to Michigan, but he loves University of Michigan. He grew up in Michigan and he's attached to that college. I think maybe he did take classes at some point, but they would go back and forth about the rivalries, especially with football, things like that. And so you could maybe draw him out a little bit that way. But as soon as you wanted to talk baseball, he wouldn't go anywhere near it. He put his game face on.
Well, he probably understood that anything he said would be blown up, right? Especially in that market. So, you know, he went to the extreme and never said Jack, which is
But I mean, come on, we're not looking to blow up when you're breaking down and you're at bat after you have, a couple of doubles or whatever, what you look, just give me something. I mean, that was, A-Rod was really good at that. He'd tell you what he's thinking, what he's looking for, even on a defensive side, how a play unfolded, how he's seeing it, or he'd give you his opinion on the pitcher or a teammate or whatever. I mean, Jeter just wasn't going there. So, hey, look, everybody, it's not really a knock against him. It's just that from a guy who wanted to write about him and really get a little deeper into what he was all about, he wouldn't give you that.
Harp, as you mentioned it, because again, if you ask any Red Sox fan, who was the guy you did not want to see come up? They'd all say Jeter, myself included. I mean, I grew up watching the team before I started covering it. And yeah. Even from that standpoint, you saw Jeter step into the box and he scared the crap out of you. Is there, not because he'd hit the ball out of the ballpark, but you knew it would be a brutally hard at bat and that there was every chance that he had to defend the whole field against him. I mean, he was just a brutal, brutal guy to pitch to in a big spot. So do you ever remember a spot where he choked?
I mean, nothing specific.
And I just mean off the top of your head. Do you ever remember an occasion where, wow, you don't see that often?
Not really. And that was, I'll tell you, that was the, and, you know, people, you want to debate whether there's such a real thing as clutch. The thing about him was he had this confidence that was, you couldn't shake him. He had this confidence about himself that was, it was real. If you were around him, you just saw it. You asked teammates about it, and he never doubted himself. He always thought he was going to get a hit, no matter the situation. And I think he took that same mentality. So when he got into the postseason, the at-bats were never bigger because he always thought he was going to get a hit no matter what. And he never gave the pitcher any credit when the pitcher got him out. So I think that's just the confidence that some guys have and some don't. It was unshakable with him. I mean, I guess, maybe not the ultimate example because he got bigger hits, obviously, in the World Series, but that last game at Yankee Stadium, his last game, he gets that hit, to win the game. I mean, a storybook ending. You just don't see that those type of things. But he had a lot of them over a course of whatever he played, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. His postseason and regular season numbers are almost identical. I mean, really, it just goes to show you he was the same player all the time. Like, regardless of the competition, good competition, bad competition, I think his career regular season average was .310. Postseason, it was .308. And his OPS in the postseason is actually a little higher than it was during the regular season by about 20 points. But they're really close, right? I mean, one's like 820, one's like 840, and I'm rounding off. But he was somewhere in that area. Before we let you go, just quick, Hall of Fame ballot goes in. Where are you on the Hall of Fame now? Are you yes on steroid guys, no on steroid guys? Who's on your ballot this year? Before you go, let me just tell you who I voted for, okay? So that way you know where I'm coming from. I voted for Bonds. I voted for Clemens.
You're soft.
I voted for Manny Ramirez. And I voted for Jeter. Those are my four.
You're soft. You're soft. I'm still hard on crime. I think we've talked about this before. I don't vote the steroids guys. I'm glad to see, though, that you don't draw a distinction between Bonds, Clemens, and Manny Ramirez with this whole Wild Wild West thing, because you're either you don't care about them or you do. To me, I'm not rewarding those guys for cheating the game, and so I don't vote for them. This year I haven't studied it completely, but I know I'll vote for Jeter. I don't think I'm voting for any of the other newcomers. But you don't vote for Schilling, huh?
I don't
vote for Schilling.
Yep, go ahead. Why do you vote for Schilling? Same logic as Jeter, elevated in the big moments?
Yes. I mean, he's one of the all-time great postseason pitchers. And his regular season, when you add that together, I think it's good enough, especially if Messina's in now. I don't see how Schilling can't be.
What about Pettit? I'll vote.
I don't think it's the same as Clemens and Bonds with the PEDs, but I got to be true to that stance, though. I can't make exceptions, so I'm going to hold that against him as much as I don't think he was really a guy that was a
hardcore
chronic user. Yeah, so
I forgot. That's right. I forgot he was a guy that got popped in that. He admitted it, right?
He was in the Mitchell Report with Clemens, and that's why I don't vote for Sheffield either. I think Sheffield's a Hall of Famer, but he's got that tinge too. He worked out with Bonds. He admitted Bonds gave him the clear and the cream and all that. So I can't not vote for Bonds and Clemens. Vote for those guys. I got to be true to that. But I do. I think, the other thing, Trevor Hoffman's in. to me, Billy Wagner's got to be in. His numbers are more dominant than Hoffman's in every category except.
Okay, but did you vote for Hoffman?
I ended up voting for. I sort of got pushed there.
Don't you love it when that happens? Yeah. See, I didn't vote for him, so I don't vote for Wagner. The only closer I vote for is Rivera. That's it. I mean, unless you want to go back to, you know, guys from a different era, like, you know, and I voted for Eck way back at the beginning, but Eck's kind of a unique case.
He should be in. But I think the way I ended up thinking about it was, if you're going to consider closer, you know, a position, which it is now, Rivera is the best of the best, but you know, you don't put just the best of the best in, and you know, Hoffman is on the next level with guys like Wagner and guys like that. So I think they should be represented just like, you know, catchers and second basemen or whatever. So I think that's how I went.
Yeah. See, I don't
think you are.
So I look okay. at, and honestly, I just want the best of the best anyway. So let me ask you.
I do think the standard got a little too high there, especially for a number of years when hardly anybody was getting in. I do think it should be a celebration of the best players in the game. So, which to me, doesn't have to be an all-time great. It does get tricky because you have in your head what you think is a Hall of Famer, and so you're not necessarily, when you're watching a guy, you may not think of him that way. And then you look at the numbers. Kind of Mussina was a classic case. I sort of got, I ended up voting for him because of the numbers, pitching in the AL East, pitching in the steroid era, all those wins. I mean, the numbers are really good. I just, you know, but when you watch a guy, you kind of have, you form your own image of him. And he didn't necessarily strike me as a Hall of Famer, but I do think guys should be, I think there should be, the best players in the game should be represented in every generation. And I think he ended up being one of those guys.
All right, just real quick, David Ortiz, yes or no? He's up in 2 years.
I can't do it.
Because of the steroids.
I mean, I know he's gotten a free pass on that for the most part, but what's different about him in terms of being in that original group, the sample testing, whatever it was. And that, now I know that everybody's tried to erase that. It seems like even Manfred himself, but if he was in that group, what's different? That's how A-Rod ended up getting outed in the first place. So the difference was Ortiz was smart enough to deny, and nobody could back, and where A-Rod basically got pushed in the, I mean, A-Rod did a lot. I'm not comparing him because A-Rod did a lot worse, obviously, but if you used, and so it's tricky. I'm just drawing the line there. I just think the Hall of Fame is the highest personal honor you can get. A lot of these guys made tons and tons of money because of the steroids and the fame and everything else. The Hall of Fame is the highest personal honor. I feel like I can withhold that if I feel like they were chronic or they were definite users.
All right, Harp, we're going to let you go. Is it that painful?
No, always great talking to you, Tony.
Yeah, likewise.
Always great talking to
you. No, and look at the bright side. As the listeners know, that you're no longer with the Daily News. You're effectively like semi-retired now. So we finished just in time for your afternoon nap.
Hey, I'm still writing, you know, check out my columns, SNY TV, you know, I mean, come on, you know, I gotta hold you accountable among other people.
All know, right.
For your opinion.
Appreciate it. All right. Thanks for the time.
Okay, Tony. Good talking to you.
You too. Harp, listen, thanks a lot. So our thanks to John Harper, again, formerly the New York Daily News. A reminder, each week you can listen to the Baseball Reporters podcast on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com, also on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. And while you're there, check out all the other original podcasts from Boston's home for sports. That's 98.5 The Sports Hub. And you can also find all these at bpodstudios.com. That's B like B as in Beasley. bpodstudios.com and at the Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the usual places. And thanks to producers Roger Moore and John Riley. And for all of you listening, we'll see you on the next episode of the Baseball Reporters Podcast.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.